This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? Someone broke into your 79 Pinto and stole your entire 8-track collection, and now you're bummed out because you have to live a life without any portable music. Dude, how old are you? Get with the times, man. Streaming is where it's at. What do you mean you'd love to stream music, but your iPhone won't play 8 tracks? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? No? Then get the fuck out of here. All right, buckle up, gang. We've got some news, a special guest, and a great show for you tonight. We're going to find out if streaming killed rock and roll. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
Cause we gotta get down, damn it.
The weekend never ends on WMMS Cleveland.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching?
I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line, Rico Gnu with the Gnu's. Rico, how the hell are you?
I'm doing great.
No, Gnu.
I've got a couple little juicy tidbits here for you. So let's just start with the first one. This is, right now, I'm getting my stuff from Loudwire because that's just where I'm going. They have some good juicy nuggets there, so I got no reason to go where else. So if I go somewhere else, I'll let you know. This is an article written by Chad Childers. Again, the fucking Van Halen saga, Scott. It just won't go away. So now Wolfgang, who really, if it's not Alex, it ought to be Wolfgang speaking with regard to this tribute reunion kind of a thing that everybody thinks they want them to have, right? And if there's anybody who really ought, and this is just my humble opinion, there's anybody who really ought to be speaking on this, it's Wolfie. And he's already given his comments on this, that he doesn't think it's going to happen because some people are easier to work with than others, and it's just not coming together, and so it's probably not going to happen. Well, these other, like Sammy Hagar, David Lee Roth, they can't just let it go, dude. So now Sammy Hagar has to put his 2 cents in. So that's what this article is. This article is Sammy Hagar putting his 2 cents in about why there isn't going to be a Van Halen reunion. So essentially, he's indicating So I'm going to quote a couple lines from Sammy, and then I want to get your opinion on this because I can't wait to hear what you have to say. So basically, I'm Sammy now. It's the same old story. It's the same old fucking story. Alex won't respond to me. I reach out to him. I haven't done it in a long time now because it's like, hey, you want to talk to me? Call me. But there's not going to be a Van Halen reunion. And then he says, first of all, it's too late. I've already said it a million times. Wolfie is doing such a great job with what he's doing, and he would be the perfect guy to play with us at a tribute concert. So that's out. David Lee Roth and I are still alive, but there's no way he would cooperate with me, Hagar added. So here's one more section. Singer then explains, so if Dave goes out by himself, that's not Van Halen. And if I go out, that's not Van Halen. But Mike and I are like this, and it like cross fingers thing that he's talking about. And if Al wanted to come play with us, I would love to play with Al. I said it recently, but I would love to play music with Al. I'd love to write a song with Al. I'd love to go in the studio and jam with Al. But the thought of a Van Halen reunion without Eddie, no such thing. Scott, take it away.
I mean, this is like everybody wanted the tribute show. You know, I don't know. It seems like we're interchanging, not you, but like in this interview. This was with, I think, Eddie Trunk's new show. Remember That Metal Show? Well, it's back, but it's not on TV. It's on YouTube, and it's called That Rocks now, and it's basically just a Zoom show, which is fine. We'd like seeing the guys, but we seem to be like this is interchangeable, the idea of a reunion or a tribute. And I don't think there obviously can't be a reunion without Eddie Van Halen, but Pantera's doing it. So are we talking about a tribute then? Are we talking about the Taylor Hawkins treatment, right? Where you do the massive reunion show. I think that's what people are looking for in some capacity. Not me, but there seems to be this kind of drumbeat. I know Eddie Trunk has asked this many, many times of like, you know, where's the reunion show, or not reunion? Where's the, see, I did the same thing. Yeah. Where's the tribute show? Why is it that Taylor Hawkins could have a 2-day, you know, globally broadcast tribute show that was just nominated for an Emmy, and we haven't done anything for Eddie Van Halen? How is that possible? So that's the thing, right? But it's kind of got to come from like, I mean, it's got to be important to Alex and Wolfgang, right? I mean, if it's not important to those two, I don't think Sammy, Michael, or Dave can make it happen. I think the only one who can really make it happen, I think Alex could make it happen, and I think Wolfgang can make it happen. And I don't think either one of them are invested in it, you know, or else it would have happened. Am I nuts?
Well, I think there's, I think that the idea of a tribute show, I think that ship has sailed. I kind of think it's been a little too long, and too much time has passed on that. But regardless, when you're talking about a tribute show or a reunion or whatever you want to call it, in this particular case, it's all in the dude behind the drum set. Wolfgang has absolutely zero say in this. I'm sure he's talked to his Uncle Al about this, and Uncle Al is pretty much telling everybody to fuck off on this one. He doesn't want to do it, man. I have no idea why he doesn't want to do it. I guess I can only guess that in his perspective, he's not going out there without Ed. Ed's not here. He's not doing it. He's not fucking doing it. He already put up with enough people's bullshit for too long. I'm sure he only put up with it because he had to. And now he doesn't have to do jack shit. He is seriously get off my lawn guy with regard to this. And frankly, I mean, it's his prerogative. He doesn't have to do shit if he doesn't want to. But if there, it's all, let's not make any mistake about this. It's all in that dude behind the drum set. If he wants to do it, it's going to happen. If he doesn't want to do it, which he clearly doesn't, it's never going to happen.
So
like maybe a year or year and a half ago, that leak happened where Jason Newsted leaked in an interview where he was contacted by Alex Van Halen about taking part in a tribute show.
Yep.
So there was some rub at some point, and it was going to be Alex had reached out to Jason Newsted and Joe Satriani, and apparently was going to try to get Roth and Hagar and, you know, basically I'm guessing like kind of the all-star cast thing happening. And then Jason Newsted was being interviewed and let it slip in the interview. And then apparently that was enough to like derail the whole thing. Like it just like just being exposed in the media without your, you know, blessing was enough to kind of like freak everybody out. And they backed off. Well, I heard Jason Newsted being interviewed by Eddie Trunk, and Eddie Trunk asked him about it. And Newsted said, you know, I fucked up. I spoke when I shouldn't have, basically. And then Eddie was like, well, why aren't they getting a tribute together? And Eddie and Newsted was like cold straight with him. He's like, Alex has only ever played with Eddie. It's the only guy he's ever played with. And it's his brother. To you, it's a fucking band and you want to see the band play and you want to hear the music. But to him, it's his brother. And if he's not willing or ready to go do this because it's actually his brother who passed away, not some, you know, musician you're a fan of, then you have to respect that. So I think what Jason was basically saying was Alex is hurting and doesn't want to do this publicly. And so I think as fans, we just at that point, the discussion stops and you just say, okay, hands off. This ain't happening. It's some dude's family. It's blood, you know? So, you know, what can we do?
Can anybody blame him for that? I mean, it's not like fucking Metallica where Cliff Burton dies. You just fucking reload with Jason Newsted and Robert Trujillo and just let her rip. It's not like that. Those two, I think it was pretty well known that those two guys were fucking thick as thieves, man. They're brothers. And so, yeah. And so to your point, it's not just a dude that played guitar in this band. It's just fucking family and he doesn't want to do it. And so these fucking articles where Hagar is just trying to poke the bear by making this shit, that's all he's trying to do. He's trying to negotiate with Alex through the media. He's trying to pressure him to do something through the media is what this is. And it's bullshit. And he should just let it go, man. Just spend the rest of your days down in Cabo drinking tequila with your band, doing your little gigs in front of 20 or 30 people, make your money on your tequila, just do what you're doing now and forget about the Van Halen reunion tribute, whatever it is, because it ain't gonna happen. He doesn't want to do it. He a part of him died when his brother died, and you can't blame him for not wanting to do it. So I think everybody should just let it go, right?
Not to belabor this, because I know we want to get onto the next news story, but Sammy's becoming Dave Mustaine. Where,
oh, dude, good.
It's
good
like, pull. Stop taking the bait from the media. When the media asks Dave Mustaine about Metallica, he can't not comment. Just say no comment. Just say no comment. And when they ask you about, if you're Sammy Hagar, and they're asking you about Van Halen, because he only comes off sounding bitter. He comes off sounding just like Mustaine does. He only comes off sounding bitter in these comments. Like he's bitter. He should just be, he's wealthier than any other rock star alive. He's made a gajillion dollars with his tequila and his Cabo Wabo and all that bullshit. He lives on a fucking beach. He's the hard rock Jimmy Buffett. Just fucking put your toes in the sand and enjoy your life, man. Because when he comments on this stuff, this whole thing, everything you said, he just sounds bitter.
It's the same old fucking story. Alex won't respond to me. I call him and he won't call me back. He won't even talk to me. It's like he just sounds angry. It's like,
I mean, does he really think that saying shit like this on Eddie Trunk's show is gonna entice Alex to call you?
No,
fuck no, it's not gonna happen. It's gonna make him not want to call you even more than he's already doesn't want to call you.
Yeah, it just makes everybody sign, and nobody wants to be associated with it. It's like, well, Wolfie's the only guy who would do it, and he's doing fine on his own. And then Dave's a space cadet, he won't talk to me. And it's like, God,
yeah,
dude.
Exactly. He's turning into Uncle Stan, right?
He is.
Jesus. No, the Mustaine parallel was a great pull, by the way.
Just say no comment.
Exactly. Or just like talk about, yeah, man, those were, that was then. We had some great times. I'm just trying to do my thing now, right? Just do that. Just take the diplomatic route. So let me ask you a question, Scott. When you think of great bass players, in just in rock, jazz, whatever, we've got what? We've got, let's just rip off a couple, just off top of my
Billy
head.
Right? Sheehan.
Billy Sheehan, John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin, right?
John Entwistle.
John Entwistle, right?
Les Claypool.
Les Claypool, right?
Geddy Lee,
Gene Simmons, right? I mean, well, according to Gene Simmons, he maybe ought to be on that list. So there's another article on, I can't wait to talk to you about this one. This is going to be fun. So this was written by Chad Childers again. He's pulling some good shit, man. So Gene Simmons had a chat with UltimateGuitar.com. And he shared an anecdote, Scott, about one time when he was talking, you know, he's talking about how really great musicians such as himself don't know how to read or write music, like John Lennon didn't know how to read or write music. And this is him talking. Paul McCartney, Jimi Hendrix, Buddy Rich, none of these guys knew how to read or write music, right? I don't know how much of that is true. I know Paul McCartney has said he doesn't know how to read music. I can't speak for the other guys. But then he shared this really interesting story about an interaction that he had with Geddy Lee. Scott, let me tell you the story, if you don't mind. Quote fingers. I'll tell you a story. Kiss took, and his wording is superb, man. Kiss took out Rush on their first tour. He took them out, right? Mm-hmm. Kiss took out Rush on their first tour, recalled Simmons. They came out to support us, you know, because we liked what they did. And this was in their working man period when they sounded kind of like a Canadian Zeppelin, which I still prefer. So Gene Simmons prefers the John Rutsey working man version of Rush, by the way. Which I still prefer, in Gene's words, sound-wise. But obviously, they've done very well. And we used to hang out with the guys and joke around and everything. So here comes the good part. One night, Scott, back in the hotel or backstage someplace, Geddy and I, were sitting down trading licks. Like, imagine if you will. Gene has his bass, right? Geddy's got his bass, and they're just hanging out backstage trading licks, right? So that's, Gene says they're back there trading licks, right? And I said, this is Gene Simmons, and I said, do you want to do a blues scale? I'm having trouble with this. He says, do you want to do, he asked Geddy Lee if he wants to do a blues scale, right?
Sure.
He says, you go first, and then I'll continue the chord patterns. This is so fucking funny, man. And he said, I don't know what you mean. At least from what I recall, is what he says. So at least from what he recalls, Geddy said he didn't know what he was talking about. Geddy didn't understand what a blues scale was or what 1-4-5 meant. That also bears noting, he says. That also bears noting that when you go 1-4-5 to a musician, that means something. It's a relationship of notes or chords, Simmons explained, which is not, that's true, actually. I mean, if you're a musician, you know 1-4-5 is. So I go, well, okay, then you hit a G, either octave or low. And then he said, which one is that? Geddy played purely by ear. Now, of course, later on, he learned what notes were and stuff like that, revealed the Kiss bassist. So there you go. Kiss, Gene Simmons is teaching Geddy Lee the blues scale.
It sounds like he was hitting on Geddy Lee. One night back at the hotel or backstage, Geddy and I were sitting down. I said, do you want to do a blues scale? You go first. And then I'll continue. And then Geddy innocently says, I don't know what you mean. Yeah, in related news, Nikki Sixx was trading licks with Jaco Pastorius. It was amazing. I mean, Jaco was lost until he saw girls.
You know,
girls. He didn't know what the hell he was doing.
I saw a Victor Wooten interview, and he said, you know, I owe all of my tasty licks to Nikki Sixx.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Gene Simmons were my two biggest influences.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, where to begin with this? I mean, Gene Simmons. Hey, listen, man. Gene Simmons is one of the greats of bass, giving Geddy Lee bass lessons. I mean, oh, shit.
A couple thoughts. Number one, Geddy is far too much of a gentleman to come out in the press and dispute this. And so my prediction is he will not. Whereas in recent weeks, you remember Bob Rock said that Nikki Sixx couldn't play bass before Dr. Feelgood. And Nikki Sixx very quickly went to the press and said, you know, that's bullshit, right?
Oh, sure.
Geddy won't say a word. Geddy will let it go. He's too much of a gentleman. And frankly, the world knows better than this, right? So there's really no need for him to put himself out there. He'll just let Gene just have diary of the mouth. Are you buying a word of this? I don't buy any of this.
Here's why. He's self-admittedly doesn't know how to read or write music, and he plays bass with a pick. You think Geddy Lee is going to take lessons from a dude who plays bass with a pick?
Well, the other thing is, too, is that I don't recall what years Rush toured with Kiss, but if you remember, Bob Ezrin came out in an interview and said that when Kiss went into record their fourth record, Destroyer, that he had to basically have like music theory class in the studio just because he's like, guys, we got to be able to speak the same language here. So I'm going to teach you a little bit of music theory. I mean, Bob Ezrin. So that was their fourth record, which was like 76 or 77. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure where this alleged encounter falls with like Geddy. You know what? Okay. Maybe let's just play nice. Maybe it's 76. And here's what's happening. Do you remember your first semester in college whenever you're finally for the first time in your life, like learning stuff and you're like so blown away. You've had like your first humanities class or something. So you can't wait to like share the knowledge and you'll like talk to somebody in your life and like blow their minds with what you've just found out with your newfound knowledge at 19 in college, right?
You're like ripping off like intro to philosophy shit that you learned on your first day of class, and you think it's like you're really cool and shit,
right? And other people politely nod and listen, but yeah, they had that already, and they know what you're going through, so they just kind of put up with it. Well, maybe what's happening here is maybe this was an encounter that Gene had with Geddy after one of his music theory classes with Bob Ezrin, you know, recording Destroyer, and Gene was like imbued with all this recent found knowledge of the blues scale.
I just learned one, four, five.
And he couldn't wait to tell Geddy Lee. And so Geddy Lee just politely, like, kind of like, sure, Gene, show me the blues scale. I'm Geddy Lee.
Right. In fact, I know for a fact, gosh, let's see if I can look this up real quick while we're talking. But I know for a fact that Kiss, when Rush was touring with Kiss, Neil Peart was with the band.
Yes.
And so they were at least fly by night, which they were already well on their way by then. I can just see it. There's this really interesting relationship with chords called a 1-4-5. Let me just put my arms around you and show you what that looks like on the fretboard. Bow chicka wow wow. Rush toured with Kiss at various points in 1974, 1975, and 1976.
There you go.
By 75 and 76, we're talking like 2112. We're talking they've already started to write Farewell to Kings and Xanadu. So this is like, so Gene is given prog rock Geddy Lee bass lessons at this point in time. They have just entered their prog phase when Gene is giving Geddy Lee blues scale lessons.
Yeah, whatever. Gene wrote Calling Dr. Love, so
it's a good song, actually.
It's a great song. But so it holds up. So maybe 76 then. Maybe we're recording Destroyer. Gene just learned 1/4/5 and just
this
couldn't
fits
wait
with your,
to
with sit your Bob Rock story.
It fits with the it's the first semester of college. Everybody does this. Whatever.
And
you're...
he couldn't wait to share his knowledge with a compadre of his. We both play bass. We're on the same team. Let's talk shop together.
Could you imagine though that the spectacle of it all backstage? You have Geddy Lee in what's the Japanese what are they called? Kimonos or whatever the hell it was that he was wearing back then.
And
2112 days. So
you
have Geddy Lee sitting there wearing that with like the giant Rickenbacker bass. And then next to him, you have Gene in the demon outfit with a fucking axe on his lap, an axe bass.
By then, Ged had the, I think, on Xanadu, it's a double Rickenbach, right? So he has the double. He's
a double neck.
By then, he's got the double neck Rickenbach bass, and Gene's playing the axe, right, with a pick, and he's like, "Let's talk shop, Ged."
I think if Geddy Lee would have handed Gene Simmons the double neck Rickenbacker, Gene might have actually exploded right there in that moment. Like his brain would have just.
Oh, shit. I would have probably sold my left testicle to be a fly on the wall during that whole interchange. Oh my God. You're right, dude. Geddy he's never going to address this. Him and Alex are too busy selling their beer and their mustard, have you tried any of that yet?
I have not.
Dude, we're going to have to maybe experience that on an episode together. And talk about it. I can't wait to try it out.
Oh my gosh. I'm just trying to imagine Gene getting one look at the Xanadu double neck bass guitar.
Yeah, he would know what to do with it.
I think,
like, seriously,
Geddy could like hand it to him and Gene's head would implode in a millisecond, like the Titan submersible. It would have just
And pieces of his brain would just go everywhere. The thought of trying to make a note come out of that thing would just he wouldn't know what to do with himself. Holy Christ! So if any of you out there ever try to think of the great bass players and don't have Gene Simmons on that list, you are sadly mistaken. And that list is farcical and wrong. Unless it has his name on it. And Geddy Lee owes his greatness to that blues scale and that 1/4/5 that he learned from Gene Simmons. Thank you, Gene. My Rush fandom has been completely validated, knowing full well that he learned the blues scale from you. I feel validated now.
Thank you,
Gene. In being a Rush fan, thank you.
All right, Rico, anyway, better wrap the news, buddy.
Yeah, dude, let's enough about that. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got a little something different for you tonight. So in order to find out what that is, though, you got to stick around. So we'll be right back.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts or visit battleofthebandspod.com.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, On this day, the birth of rock and roll, gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, gang, Rico and I have spent the better part of the last 2 years trying to figure out what killed rock and roll. Was it Blackie Lawless and his codpiece with the buzzsaw? Was it Jim Morrison and his bizarre obsession with shagging his mother? Or could it be streaming that killed rock and roll? We don't know. So, to find out, we brought in an expert in the broadcasting field. Nick from Stage Dive, welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing, man, buddy? Nothing.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man. This is awesome.
No, we're pumped to have you on the show. Before we get into Stage Dive and what it is and how it's different, first why don't you tell us how you got involved with Stage Dive?
Yeah, so I I'm a musician, I'm in a band, and have been, picked up a guitar when I was like 12 years old, so I've been in and out of garage bands and stuff, and recording with my band Maledictorian right now, actually. And my wife and I started a podcast a couple years ago, and kind of just started doing it for fun. And then I ended up starting a media company through doing that, trying to really just, I realized that there were a lot of people that wanted to do this for fun. And I saw a lot of my friends that were musicians and podcasters and, creative people trying to do something that were kind of just hitting roadblocks of either people telling them that, like, oh, there's all these hoops you got to jump through because they were trying to be the middleman. Or just, just being like unnecessarily discouraging or really trying to screw them over in some way. And so we kind of started our own media company, just really, really, very small, but just trying to give people like me and the guys in my band and the people I podcast with and stuff a platform to actually be able to like go somewhere and not have anyone try to own what you're doing. That kind of became our thing really quickly, is we don't own you. And I kind of got put in touch with John, who's the brains behind Stage Dive, through friend of a friend. And in doing that, I just heard about his vision of what he wanted to do. And man, it was exactly what I was trying to do with Sage Media. And just that same idea of like, put the artists in charge, like let the inmates run the asylum a little bit, and everything will be a little bit better, instead of trying to really force people under your thumb so you could try to win out in the end. That's just not what I believe in.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So your media company is Sage Media, right?
Yes, correct. That's SMYGE. Cool.
Nice. Where'd you pull that name from?
Well, my wife and I are both, we both have native in us. She's native from from here in the U.S. and my mom was from Costa Rica and she's from the native tribes there. So both of us are definitely, that's a big part of us.
That's cool, man.
Trying to think of a cool name. And then we were like, well, I'm sure that's probably been taken by someone. And then, adding the Y in, we were like, that's kind of a cool way to say, like, we're not going to censor you. You know, you can say whatever you want as long as you're on our platform. You know,
right. Nice. How long have you had that media company been up and running?
A couple years now. We actually started literally right before the pandemic and had some stuff lined up and got fucked right off the get go. And really lost a lot of, we had some stuff set up with putting together some other shows and, trying to bring people in to shoot some music videos and stuff, and everything really just got shut down very quick. So
Jesus, how'd you manage to make it through the other side of the pandemic in one piece? Because that's not easy to do, bro. I mean, you managed to take a budding media company and pull it through pandemic and make it through on the other side. How'd you manage that?
Yeah, well, luckily, that's a thing I'm growing completely grassroots, in all honesty, man, it's a slow burn, and that's totally fine with me because it's 100% hours and the way we want to do it. I'm a welder full time. So, that's where I was able to survive through and actually make the money and everything. So Sage is more of a passion project and something that we're really trying to build up the right way and not try to jump so far ahead of ourselves that we end up taking on unnecessarily, like, just get investors involved or something when we don't need to. We want to keep control of everything so we can make sure when we tell someone this is the way we operate, no one gets to second guess that.
Nice. So you met John through a friend of a friend. How did that meeting go?
Oddly enough, actually, my dad met John through a friend of a friend. Years ago, my dad and I used to play Call of Duty online together, and there was a guy. Nice. I don't even know where he is. It's just a dude somewhere that played online with my dad at some point. And my dad's also a musician. He's, he's the one that kind of got me to pick up a guitar in the first place, And so when John had this idea for Stage Dive, that mutual friend had reached out to my dad and was like, hey, your band should jump up on here. And so John reached out just to kind of talk to him about what Stage Dive was all about. And he was like, you need to talk to my son because he's got a media company. One of the things that we did on my wife and I had a podcast actually got canceled. She still works a corporate job, and someone, I guess, looked up our show, which I don't, they had to go through multiple pages of people to even connect those dots. And I guess complained to corporate, and we kind of had to put that on hold. So,
oh my gosh, yeah, that's crazy, man.
Ridiculous. I know, but
I'm surprised we haven't been canceled by now.
We've talked about it. It's a weird thing because you want to, in a weird way, you want to stay anonymous, but you also want to get listeners. So you're trying to like thread a pretty crazy needle there with podcasting.
Dude, we really didn't even put our names on. I mean, like, our names were said on the show, but it's not like we were like doing a bunch of advertising with our names. We kind of knew, right, like, we really don't want to connect this to our jobs. So, like, her personal page showed that, like, her and I were married, and on my personal page it led to one of the promos for a podcast. They went to that, so like they had to go through multiple layers unnecessarily. So they complained, and we were kind of told take it down or else. So we had to take everything down, and it's fine because we're gonna be throwing it probably back up on Stage Dive because that'll be behind a paywall and you can't tell me what to do. So
that's cool, man. So you and John hook up. How did that go? Did he have to convince you to see his vision? Did you have to convince him to get on board? How'd that work out?
Yeah, I saw it pretty quickly, man. In all honesty, when he started talking about what this was, I got really excited, and it kind of just worked out, man, because oddly enough, when we were doing that show, we were just trying to find something cool to stand out from other podcasts. And so one of the things we were doing is every episode that we could, we were trying to, I just blasted out to as many bands as I could just on social media and stuff. We tried to end every episode with a different band.
Mm-hmm.
And, we knew, like, we're not going to get any major bands. So let's, look, local bands don't get played anywhere. Nobody shows us any love. So let's reach out to as many bands as we can that are small time, that are trying to make it, and just give, even if not many people are listening to us, let's just give them somewhere else to play their music. And in doing that, I ended up with this big pool of musicians all over the country and really all over the world that I had gotten to know from talking to him about doing the podcast and stuff. And so when John started telling me about this, it was easy for me to connect the dots of like, man, I can reach out to so many people right now that I know will be into this idea. And, you know, just always trying to find a way to hustle and do something more myself, you know, and I think John saw that pretty quick. And, you know, we just hit it off and he brought me on board right away.
That's cool, man. So now we're at the big question. So what is Stage Dive and how is it different from other streaming services?
Yeah. So, you know, like you said, it's a streaming service. So it's a new platform that's going to be coming out. The beta is going to be out later this year. And then the full version is going to drop early 24. But like I said, right away, what drew me in with what John was saying was just putting us as creators back in control, man. And to answer your question, I'm gonna kind of get into, you know, did streaming kill rock and roll, get into what I think is a little bit of a double-edged sword just across music in general right now. I think streaming has been incredible for music as a whole, for musicians, for people that are, look, we wouldn't be able to do this, you know, a long time ago. You would have had to have had a radio show that got picked up somewhere and have someone telling you what it is and what it's supposed to be, what you're allowed to say, and, you know, be careful about every little thing. And I would have no way of knowing you unless I was a local in that area. So, you know, as a podcaster also, like, I can't deny this is awesome. There's a whole industry that was built that never would have existed. You know, and we have a lot of people to thank for that, those early broadcasters that really kind of pushed the limits and stuff. But, you know, when you get into it, you start realizing, like, some shows make a lot of money and most don't. And I think a lot of people look at, like, you know, Rogan got $100 million deal and it's like, there's money in podcasting. Well, yeah, for him, you know, right. Really, you can make money in it for sure, but it's a lot more difficult, I think, than people think. And I think the same is, if not more so, to be said about the music business. You know, back in the day, we've heard horror stories of, you know, the record label that screwed over an artist or something, you know, and then you find out, like, Def Leppard a couple years ago, well, I guess maybe 10, 15 years ago at this point, was considering re-recording and re-releasing all of their music because they didn't own it. The record label owned it. So they were doing world tours and making money on t-shirts. Like, that's absolutely unacceptable. You know, like, that's crazy that a band of that magnitude is just getting screwed like that. So you hear all those horror stories and it's it feels very predatory, you know? And then streaming comes along and all of a sudden you don't need to have a label. You can meet people through the internet and get in touch with people and go on a show and go on podcasts or release your music and people all over the world can hear you. And that's amazing because now you have this access to everyone that you never had. But now you're competing with literally everyone else in the world.
Yep.
And that makes it really hard. You know, like you gotta try that much harder to stand out in the crowd. And if God willing, you actually make it through that crowd, you better hope that someone doesn't blow up with their 15 minutes of fame literally right after you and everyone forgets about you.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
That's really tough, you know? And I think what I started noticing is that same predatory behavior that you see with, you know, those old record labels and stuff that really made a deal because what are you going to tell us? No, we're your only option. Well, there's only so many streaming services now. And it's not like you're not going to be on them. You know, like you really don't have much of an option. So I actually got some notes together here. So just to put it into perspective, Spotify is possibly the biggest right now going, and they pay 0.004 cents for one stream. That's not shit. Yep. You know, like that's just not much money.
Yep.
YouTube is even worse. So on 1 million views on YouTube, you'll make $690. 1 million views on Spotify, you'll make a little over $4,000. A million sales used to be a platinum album.
Yep.
Yeah, you know.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
To kind of, like I said, kind of pull it into perspective, I actually pulled some numbers on one of the best-selling albums ever, Appetite for Destruction. So Appetite for Destruction is 30 times platinum. That's insane.
Yeah.
30 times platinum, which means that album was worth $300 million.
I still wonder how that happened just to this very day, Scott.
Dude, $300 million.
Thank you. Amazing. I was going to ask you if you could repeat that. $300 million.
Well, and realistically, it could be more than that, because you got to think, I kind of pulled that number off of, you know, at the time, the what it was going to be sold on the most was cassettes.
Right.
So roughly $10, you know, at the time. So,
yep.
Yeah, but I mean, if anyone's buying a vinyl, you know, it's more than that. Especially, you know, now with it being like a trendy kind of retro thing, that number's gone up even more. You know, vinyl's $30-$40 now for a cheap one.
Yeah, and bands have to request to be certified, so they don't do it that often. So oftentimes when you're looking at numbers that are out of date, so it's even higher than what you're seeing typically.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, a million sales was a platinum album. Sweet Child of Mine, every day on one of those platforms, gets a million streams a day.
Jeez.
That's unbelievable.
Welcome to the Jungle by itself gets over 500,000 every day.
I mean, I believe it. I mean, that songs like that, they're getting a huge amount of streams. And if I'm not mistaken, you know, majority of those, like Spotify and some of the other bigger ones are generating a lot of money from their ad revenue, right? Isn't that where mostly that's coming from? And then that revenue from the ad revenue is getting split between Spotify and the record company. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it really doesn't go to the artist. And so that's the thing, is what would have been $300 million back in 87 is $131,000 now to an actual band. And that's before you have to pay out those same costs of paying your label, pay your marketing team. All of those costs are still there. You still got to pay all of that. And look, don't get me wrong, they're getting that streamed every day. That's not a bad way to make a living. You know, like, that's a lot of money to be made still, that, you know, they got more potential to get that song, even one, two songs out and have it go crazy like that, more than they did back in 87 when that album came out.
Right. But they're rock and roll Hall of Famers who have tremendous equity in their brand and are able to leverage it to daily listeners from a record that's over 35 years old or whatever. If you're an upstart band trying to make it, you know, you're not going to generate any kind of rub off of Spotify financially.
Exactly. No way.
Especially because, I mean, I use Spotify as an example because it's the biggest one right now. Spotify honestly is better than a lot of them. I mean,
yep.
In terms of what they pay out, and that's egregious, you know? And the question turns into, like, well, yeah, look, that's a lot of money they're making. How much should they be making? Because those numbers don't add up. You know, they just don't. And realistically, it's exactly what you said. That's Guns N' Roses, the Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. That's the 7th best-selling album ever.
Right.
No one is going to be in their league unless we're talking, like, Metallica and Ozzy and people like that. Just no one's there with them. So what are we supposed to do as people trying to break through the noise? Because not only is that algorithm not helping us, it's actually actively hurting us, because it's not a dude picking his favorite bands. It's just an algorithm. It's just a program that goes through and picks, well, what's making us money? Well, Guns N' Roses is making us money. You're not making us money. Why should I promote you?
Right.
It's really not in our favor. And again, look, this is not me trying to just dog on streaming. Like, streaming has been an incredible thing. Like I said, the music business and really the way people consume music, podcasts, all that has changed forever, and in a lot of ways for the better because of streaming. You know, like, you have access to everything in a way you never did. It's just, you know, the same people that before were going, like, how can we take advantage of these guys? They just switched their job title. They didn't leave the business, you know?
So then really what we're dealing with here is not necessarily the front end experience from a user standpoint. It's really the back end financials that is what makes Stage Dive different from some of these other services, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a couple things. But yeah, that's a major one. So, you know, I talked a whole lot of shit about the way they spend their money. So I guess, you know, get into that first. So the way it works with us is there is a subscription fee, just regardless. So it is a little bit more maybe along the lines of like a Patreon, if people want to kind of look at it that way. But instead of, you know, getting a Patreon for one band, you're looking at a Patreon for an entire, you know, platform worth of music. So you're getting a lot more bang for your buck. But once it actually gets, you know, out of their hands into ours, 50% comes to the platform. The other 50% goes directly to the artist. So instead of paying out literally less than a penny, we're trying to make it so that an artist can actually have an opportunity to make real money on our platform. So instead of things going by stream, so instead of like charging by stream, the way a band on Stage Dive is going to make their money is actually broken out by time. So however much time a user spends listening to different bands, it goes almost into like a pie chart, and it's going to get split out accordingly. So that 50% of their money that's going, you know, not to the platform, going to the artist, is going to get broken out into who you actually supported. That way, you know, if you're listening to your favorite bands, your money's going directly to them. It's not going to just whoever's at the top. That's the other part that I have an issue with, you know, because it's all in ad revenue and stuff with a lot of the streaming services that are now. Also, Stage Dive is ad free, by the way. That's a big selling point. Nice.
That's great. That's huge.
But because, I mean, they're incredibly annoying. They just are. But because ad revenue is how those platforms really make their money, they got to pay that back into who's making them the money in those ads. You know, like, it doesn't matter who you support. Taylor Swift's getting paid because she's making them money. That's just, you know, that's just the reality. So if you're a Slayer fan, they're not seeing as much as Taylor Swift is. Well, I'm not listening to her. You know,
listen, man, when I am on Spotify and I'm listening to like Rain and Blood, I think about buying car insurance, and I'm really looking forward to that car insurance ad, because it really pairs well with the music I'm listening to. So don't tell me not to listen to those ads, brother, because that's what I want. I want insurance ads while I'm listening to some good metal. So that's just me, though. That's just my taste.
And to be clear, any podcasts or whatever that come on, if you guys want to run ads for any show that comes on, feel free to do so. That's your airtime, but we're not running any ads on behalf of the company,
right?
Because again, we're not going to tell any artists what to do with their time, but we just, you know, that was a real big sticking point right from the get-go. It was like, we got to figure out how to make money without that, because that infuriates everyone who's a part of the team. It's like, all right, we're just not going to do that. We're just gonna have to find another avenue.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that was a big part of it right away for me when you asked what made me want to kind of be part of the team here, is just that idea of like, my money is going to who I support, you know, whether that's one band, whether that's 100 bands. If I'm listening to that band, I want them to get the money. You know, I don't want her to go to a band I've never heard of, or some show I've never heard of, or that I outright don't like.
That's huge, man. I mean, this sounds like a great way for like the artists that Scott was talking about that don't have that brand equity, that they can just throw around, you know, like a big giant swinging dick to get the people to, you know, get their stream out there. This is a great way for up and comers to get their foot in the door and to get their share. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
'Cause it's hard. It's rough, man. I mean, it's the way things are currently, it's everything is strictly in the hands of the music industry and the ads and your streaming service really sounds like a phenomenal way to get those up and comers a chance. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to build a community there where bands can help each other and support each other and stuff. Because I think a lot of that has gone away in the local scene also. And I don't think it's necessarily the fault of any, you know, particular scene in general. I think that became very difficult to, I mean, anyone who's trying to play a hometown show knows it's just difficult to get people to want to come out to your show. You know, even if you're a really good band, people don't go out to shows the way they used to.
Right.
And it's very easy. You know, I know a lot of people that I love going to concerts. It's one of my favorite things on the planet. I love going to concerts. I love going to festivals. Love all that. There's a lot of people I know that don't really care that much about it. And it's because they've really grown up the majority of their life. If there's a concert they want to see, it's on YouTube. You can go see your favorite band on YouTube. And to me, it's not the same. You know, there's a energy that's there being at the show and being around everybody and having fun and all that. Like, if someone doesn't latch onto that the same way, they don't give a shit. It's just go type in whatever your favorite band is, watch them play wherever you want. So I think a lot of people kind of lost the love for going out and seeing live music as much. So trying to like rebuild this community there while also, like you said, you know, if we can get bigger bands on there, if we can get bigger, you know, names on there, that's awesome. And that's great. But this is built for the indie artist. This is built for those up and comers that are busting their ass trying to get some traction. And you got to do a whole bunch of work before you even have the option of getting monetized on most of these platforms. And then you can make bad money. So like we're trying to give right. you an option right away that's just different. You know, we're not telling you to take your music down anywhere else. We're just giving you another option that hopefully works better for you. Hopefully your fans feel like supporting you and have that same kind of love for like wanting to give money to the people that they really care about and support the same way we do, you know, and try to give you a way to like directly to your fans where they can really support you. And you can say, this actually does put money in our pockets. This helps us grow our fan base. This helps us do, you know, everything that we're trying to do as a band more than these other platforms do, you know, like we know it's kind of an uphill battle because we're jumping into a space that is, you know, saturated with people that have a lot more money than us, but you know, it's not really for that. You know, it's for the up and comer more than anything, you know, and those are the people kind of getting left behind. So if we can get some bigger names on there, that'd be awesome. But until then, that's not really what it's built for.
Well, you know, baby steps, right? Are you going to be working in like any merchandising opportunities, like shirts, hats, anything with the bands or artists that are on there?
Yeah. So I was actually telling John, I'm trying to be trying not to overcommit our developers to too much and get them pissed off at me with some of the stuff right. we have coming down the road. But yeah, we have some really, really cool stuff coming, you know, once the like I said, the beta is coming out Q4 of this year. And then once the full thing launches, we're going to have some really cool opportunities to kind of let bands connect directly with their audience, where things, like you said, merchandise, ticket sales, and things where you can really, we're trying to be a one-stop shop so that you really don't have to remember, you know, if you hear a band that you like, it's like, oh shit, what was their name? You know, like everything's right there.
Yeah, it's crazy because I guess the angle to kind of think of it is it's a way to directly support artists you love. And not to be like Debbie Downer, but it's getting hard out there for musicians to make a living. Touring has, with inflation, touring costs have gone through the roof, gas, it's not as profitable as it was. Venues are taking a cut of merch now, and merch used to be the bread and butter for bands to make money on the road. And now venues want to stick their fingers. Yeah. And now venues want a slice of that pie. So it's getting harder and harder for, I worry, not to be all Debbie Downer here, because we like to keep it light, but I do worry about the future of the music I love. If people can't make a living at doing, I'm elderly, I'm not going to go out and make music, but I need young people to do it so that the music can survive. And, you know, it's just, I don't see incentive to go out and bust your ass to try to make it in the music business if there isn't a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, right? I mean, you gotta, it's obviously for the love of music, right? But it'd be nice to make a living doing it as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think a lot of people see a really short-term objective, you know. I think things like you know, like Instagram, TikTok, like you see a lot of people that seem to be making a living doing like kind of quick hit things, you know.
Right.
That fades at some point. And look, to all those people, good on them. You know, like I don't have any problem with anyone
right.
doing whatever they can to, you know, have their channel, make their money, whatever. Like absolutely no hate towards that. Awesome for them. But you know, I know how much time and energy and work goes into writing music and practicing together and, you know, hauling equipment around and, you know, recording. Like when you hear that song on a streaming platform, on the radio, whatever, like a lot of fucking time went into that.
Oh, yeah. You
know? And a lot of work went into that. And there's a million people you've never heard of that spent a lot of time and energy and money and everything else for you to not give a shit about what they're doing. And just knowing how much, you know, work and time goes into that, man, it is depressing. Like, like I know you said not to be all Debbie Downer, but it sucks, man. It's really depressing sometimes to think of just the way the industry has changed. And you know, it has changed, but like I said, it has vibes of that same kind of like the guy, you know, rubbing his hands together like, oh, we're gonna screw over this young band that doesn't know any better, you know. Like, that's always fucking existed. And just knowing that it still feels that way, and it's crazy because now more than ever you're able to do it without a middleman,
right?
You know, like, to get on a platform, you don't need to have a label. Dude, we're recording in my bass player and singer, both audio engineers. We're recording in my bass player's house. You know, like, we didn't have to go to a studio. Like, we're not having to pay at a studio. It's taking longer, so we're doing it all ourselves, but we didn't have to invest a whole bunch of money in going to a studio and all that stuff. That's possible now. You can build a studio in your house. You can learn how to be an audio engineer and do things yourself. You can, you know, you, like I said, you don't have to have a record label. You just have to know how to hustle and go out there and try to market yourself the right way. How is it that all of that is possible and there's still so many hands in what you're doing?
Yeah, it's crazy. I feel like whatever labels are left are just spending their time on TikTok, and they're really only interested in people who've already built a gigantic social media following. So I feel like being a musician now is so much more about being a social media marketer and influencer than it is being an actual musician or artist. You know,
there is a lot of that, you know, and I think sometimes you can, there are people that do it extremely well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
People that are truly, like, they truly love what they're doing and the music, and they care about all that. And, you know, they work hard on their product musically, but they're clearly incredible at the marketing and, you know, knowing how to use these platforms and stuff to build up, you know, their own brand and all that. And that's, you know, again, that's awesome. You also can definitely tell when there's a lot of people that it's like, damn, they're a really, really, really good band, and they don't know how to market themselves on these platforms, and they're just getting left behind. And that sucks. You know, yeah, it really sucks.
Most artists I know are like socially awkward and introverted people anyway. So it's like, you know, hey, go put yourself out there on TikTok and make a million. It's probably not going to happen. I mean, some people are, and more power to them, but most artistic types tend to be different folks, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and that's where you guys come in with Stage Dive. This is like the people's platform, the platform of the people, right?
Yeah, I
like
man. That. And absolutely. I like that too. I'm going to steal that.
Just make sure I get my, I get my cut. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not get your hands in there too? Fucking everyone else's.
Hey, you can have it free of charge.
But yeah, no, that's absolutely the truth, though, man. That's what we're trying to be. You know, we're trying to do something that's, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds sometimes, like, we are trying to do something that's for the people, you know. And I think the fact that a lot of us on the platform itself are also musicians that have, you know, felt like we're getting kicked in the dick for years. And then all of a sudden, you know, John, who is, you know, same thing, he's a musician himself, had this idea. And it was like, all right, yeah, this is good. Like, this is what we need.
Right. A platform like yours is going to give those young up and coming bands a boost, which actually is not going to kill rock and roll, but it's going to keep it alive and revive it and keep it going for following generations. So I think what we're saying here is that Stage Dive is actually going to be a part of the revival of rock and roll, right? Not the death of it.
I hope so.
Listen, isn't that what I think that's what we're saying here, Scott, right?
Well, I'm saying go to a show, for God's sake. You might get laid right. If you get out of the house once in a while. Right. I mean, come on.
You're not going to get laid in front of your laptop.
Well,
just go to a show. Well, you gotta
just delete your browsing history. You'll be all right.
Well, that's true. By another person. Let's just say it that way.
There you go.
All right. Fair enough.
Listen, man, this was a blast. I think it's what you have in the works there is pretty special. I think I can speak for Scott when I say that we really, really think that you got some legs there, and we really hope that it works out for you. And we look forward to working with you too on Stage Dive and getting ourselves in there as well. Scott,
I think you said Beta's coming in 24.
No, Beta's coming shortly. So that's coming Q4 of this year.
Awesome.
And then the full product is going to come early 24.
So nice. Follow Stage Dive on the Instas and the Twitters and all that good stuff.
Yep.
And then look for the beta in your Google Play Store and your App Store for Apple products, correct?
Yes, and it's Get Stage Dive on our social platforms.
Get Stage Dive, thank you. And the name of your band is what?
Maledictorian, and we're in the studio right now.
And are you available to be heard anywhere?
Not yet. This is going to be our debut album that we're recording right now.
All right, cool. Sounds good. We'll look for that then too, sir. Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Yeah, thanks. And if I could, I do have another podcast that I do actually with my old man and a friend of 20 plus years called The Guys Like Us Show. So please go check that out. And John actually did a really cool episode on Our Mind on Music.
That's really awesome.
If you want to know more about Stage Dive and hear from John himself, that's another good one to go check out.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. It was great.
Yeah, definitely it was. Plug away, man. You got anything else going on? What else you got going on in your life?
Nope, just that. Sage Media.
That's it?
If you want to, you know, got anything you're trying to make, you know, produce music videos, podcasts, whatever, come talk to us. We'll figure something out.
You're going to start your own booze label too?
I would love to.
what are you drinking right now? I saw you sipping on something.
Yeah, I got this Lusty Claw right here. It's pretty damn good whiskey.
What is that whiskey?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is that your go-to whiskey?
I got a lot of go-to whiskeys.
Are you a Scotch guy or just whiskey or what?
I do like Scotch, but whiskey and bourbon are my go-to. So I drink.
You don't do like tequila, vodka, or anything like that. Those are girly drinks, right?
Vodka, I can do now. It took me a long time to come back around on vodka because all I tasted was high school puke for a while. that was, you know, that was what we could afford. So we'd get, you know, we only had so much money to go around. So we'd get the cheapest vodka, cheapest 30 pack, and, you know, try to make a party where we could. And that led to a lot of throwing up. So
nice.
You know, that was all. So if you, a little bit, and tequila's not really my vibe. So.
So if you started your own whiskey label, what would you call it before we go?
Probably Sage, man. I'll put my name on fucking everything.
Nice.
Sage whiskey. Like it, man. Like it. Listen, man, it was a blast. Let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. Thank you. Really. I mean, coming on here was awesome. This was great.
Nick, best of luck. We'll look for you out there in the world.
Oh, hey, wait, hold on. Do I get a ruling with your normal
all right, so let's tally up our virtual scores here, Scott. I've got for Stage Dive, I've got a I've got 2.5 points.
Oh dude, I just gave him a 0.5 for gratuitous boomerism because I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how to use my 8-track player and now I gotta learn how to work Stage Dive. I mean, come on, man.
No misogyny at all. No wanton whiteness. Lots of machismo, but only in a good way. So, I think the scores add up, and your service is contributing to the life of rock and roll. So, congratulations!
Hell yeah! Let's save rock and roll.
Let's do it.
All right, Nick. Take care, man.
All right, you too.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mistake anymore.
I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at @RNRAutopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like
your opinion, man.